All right, so this morning we are continuing our sermon series through James. And for the whole month, we're looking at this letter that was written generally to many churches and many times and in many places, seeking to provide practical advice on how we can live out our faith in everyday life. Now for James, God is the source of all good gifts. The gifts of love and joy, beauty, peace. And as humans, we receive these gifts into our lives. And then our response is to share them with others, to build a community of faith in which the sharing of love, joy, and hope, and peace is the way of living. Now, this all sounds beautiful. Right? You all love this idea. Maybe you think this in your relationships. And James says, I'm sure all of us in our minds would agree with this, but we have trouble living it out. Right? Being those people of peace and love in every moment. And so his letter is about just that. Not convincing us of something that we think is true, but how do we actually apply it? How do we begin to live it out? How do we discover and experience a faith that works? So in our reading for it today, James focuses on the power of words and the need to tame our tongues, as he says. Now, on the surface, you may have noticed this. Of course, you probably felt a little uncomfortable as James gets into the meat of his argument. But really what he's saying boils down to almost traditional wisdom about words and speaking that you'd find in almost any culture at any point in time. Go back and look at the wisdom of ancient Egypt, the biblical book of Proverbs, the essays of Plutarch and Seneca, the wisdom of Confucius and the Buddha. All of them talk about the need to only speak kindly to others, about how listening, not speaking, is the true path to wisdom. And if we must speak, if it's absolutely necessary, it should be brief. Right? Never coming from a place of anger or envy. So go back at the world's great wisdom teachers, and they will all tell you that the mark of a truly wise person above all is control of their speech, controlling their words. Now, you don't have to be a student of philosophy to have learned these lessons, right? I learned Proverbs and teachings about this, but not because someone read Plutarch to me, but because we had our own proverbial phrases in my house. My first wisdom teachers were my parents and grandparents, right? So instead of some great essay about speaking positively to others, I was taught, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Many of you may have had this. Instead of wisdom is learned through silence and don't speak, I just heard, Austin, don't talk their ear off. Right? And words that don't really add any value into the universe, that's a very beautiful philosophical. I just say, the point at somebody and say, oh, all those words don't amount to a hill of beans. Now, maybe you had some phrases growing up, some teachings about remaining quiet and listening and being patient and only speaking kind words. Come up with your own. Share them with each other afterwards. You can see who has the best phrase, right? I could go through a lot of them if I needed to. But James, he echoes much of this, right? And yet at the same time, he's more pessimistic about our ability to control our words. Sure, he says, it's great if you can control your speech and say nice things all the time, only being uplifting, never talking too much. But for him, this is a level of perfection. The great wisdom teachers believed that we could work our way, we could train ourselves into mastering the way we spoke. And James says, no way. I've never met a single person who could do that. He goes at great lengths to warn us how dangerous our words can be if they're not controlled. He uses some pretty evocative images here, right? A wild fire, a full of deadly poison. As we're in the middle of it and I'm reading this too, this is not the most encouraging lesson for you to hear on a Sunday morning, is it? Right? James is taking this very seriously. But pay attention to how this whole lesson for him began. We were back at verse 1. Not many of you should become teachers, for you will be judged with greater strictness. That same line in Greek could be translated, do not become many teachers. Don't become a community where everybody thinks they can and should teach. Because while we all should be careful of how we control our speech, James recognizes that teachers have an added responsibility. Theirs is heavier than the rest of ours because they're responsible for shaping the lives of their students. How teachers talk to their students, how they handle unruly behavior or other issues in the classroom, how they talk with other teachers, all of these ways they are modeling or not modeling virtuous behavior. And so good teachers understand the power of their words, especially the ways in which our words can shape the way, especially children, perceive themselves and the world around them. So school is starting back. Our kids are going to classrooms. And I was thinking about these words we tell ourselves. And so I thought about something I used to tell myself a lot, especially this time of year, which is I'm not a math person. This is why I wasn't good at math class, right? I'm just not a math person. There are people in this world who are math people. They have some genetic code in their DNA that makes them really great at algebra and geometry and calculus. I'm just not one of those people. But it turns out that this popular saying, I've said, my brother said, I come from a non-math people family, right? Or at least that's what we tell ourselves. Turns out this is a complete myth. It's not actually true, okay? Now, let me say as a disclaimer on the outset, right, there are some insanely talented mathematicians in the world, okay? There's a professor at UCLA, Terence Tao. He is this incredible mathematician who great physicists come to and say, we can't figure this out. Please solve this problem for us. Most of us in this room, you and I, no matter how much we studied, how hard we worked, we would never be as good as Terence Tao. Right? Okay, granted. But for our kids, they don't have to be this good. Right? For high school math, studies show that it's much less about your innate ability towards mathematics, and it's much more about hard work, preparation, and self-confidence. Study after study shows that how students think of themselves and their own giftedness creates this self-fulfilling prophecy that then shapes their success. Let's stick with math, right? I'm going to process my own childhood with you. Okay, so let's say we're back in ninth grade algebra class. And there are two groups of students, right? There's one group of students that we'll call the well-prepared kids, right? For years, their parents have taken a very focused interest in their math and their studying, making sure they were always really diligent. Maybe they did in the summertime, they'd do like flashcards together and things like that. Who knows? Maybe they had a tutor or two. Okay. Then there are those kids that will the not as prepared children. Right? Their parents love them, but didn't focus on math as much. They didn't do the flashcards in the summer. They weren't always trying to solve little equations, right? And so you come up to a quiz, a test that happens in the middle of the year. The kids who are well prepared, they've practiced for years, they spend a lot of time studying, getting prepared, they take the test, and they get perfect scores or A pluses. And the kids who weren't as prepared, maybe they did some studying, but certainly not as much as the other kids, and they get a B, maybe a B plus. And when they get their grades back, the kids who didn't prepare as much, they're not aware that their fellow students spent all this time studying, did all these ways to prepare, spent years in some sense practicing for this, and they just assumed that they're just not math people. And so when the next test comes around, they say, well, I'm not going to do that great on it anyway, so I'm just not going to spend a lot of time on it. And all of a sudden, they start falling farther and farther behind. And the other kids assume the exact opposite and just assume they got really great grades because they're good at math. And so they just keep working at it because this is something they're good at. And it cements their advantage. And this is true not just in math, but for any subject in school. A team of psychologists led by Carol Dweck once conducted a study where they tried to convince a group of junior high school students in an underperforming inner city school that intelligence is highly shapeable and can be developed by hard work. So what they told students kind of amounted to this: learning changes the brain by forming new connections, and you are responsible for that change process. The result was that convincing students that they could, in some sense, make themselves smarter through hard work, they ended up getting higher grades, working harder. But not only that, Dweck found that there were a group of some of her toughest junior high boys that were reduced to tears by the news that intelligence was in some sense under their control. It is heartbreaking to go through the world thinking that you are doomed to be dumb and you're just going to have to stay that way. And yet that's the message that so many kids feel they get. And so if you are a teacher or you're a parent or you're a role model here today, this is an important lesson for us. What we tell our children is or is not possible for them can, in a very real way, shape their future. Kids are listening to us. If we tell them they are or are not a math person, they're going to believe it. If we tell them they can or can't succeed, they're going to believe it. If we tell them they are or are not going to graduate, they're going to believe it. And this is why James says we should watch our words carefully. And for those our students here today, and for those who are going to watch this with their parents, I'm going to apologize to you because I have just ruined your best excuse when report card time runs around. And you come to mom and dad and say, I'm sorry, I'm just not a math person. Turns out you are a math person. You just have to believe in yourself and study harder. So I apologize for that, right? Parents, don't be too mean about bursting that bubble. James believes in the power of words to create possibilities. But he doesn't come from a purely philosophical perspective. This is a religious perspective. It comes from the perspective of faith, right? If you go back to the book of Genesis, chapter 1, the story of creation, how the universe came to be, it all begins with God saying, "Let there be light." As the story unfolds, God speaks, and out comes light and darkness, oceans, dry land, animals, humans, rest and goodness, all come from God speaking a universe into being. In the Bible, God's words are filled with this creative power. An entire universe can be created because of them. Genesis also tells us that humans are created in God's image. We are formed out of God's love. We are created to fill the world with new creativity. And in Genesis 2, humans they're actually given the authority to use the power of speech to name animals, to go out into the world, continuing this creative process, right? James mentions some of this here. His lesson for us is not about giving us some ancient teachings about mastering our speech, right? Or just thinking of it in that way. For James, how we speak either participates in God's ongoing act of creation or it doesn't. When we use our words to hurt another person, to humiliate them, to degrade them, to curse them, it is to use the power of our words to break down God's creation. Because we were created to live in loving relationship with other people. And so when we use our words to hurt them, we're betraying the very purpose of creation. We're creating more envy and greed. We're supporting issues of violence and oppression. We're stoking these fires because the real danger of our words is not found in the passing angry word or the petty bit of slander that we use. For James, the danger that exists is the creation of distorted worlds of meaning that can oppress the truth. I mean, think about it. Our words, they can create worlds of possibility of good or evil. I have a daughter now, and I'm constantly reminded that the words I use to her can either tell her that in her future she will not be able to excel like her male colleagues in math and science, or I can tell her that she can grow up, and if she chooses to, she can win the Nobel Prize in chemistry. Or she can captain a spaceship. We can tell young boys that they're only going to succeed in athletics or that they can do something more. For Dweck, she works with a group of young boys of color, and they can either be told that they are doomed to drop out of high school and go to prison, or they can be told that they are the future leaders of their communities. What are we telling people they are capable of? What's possible for them? Because our words can either tell people that they're not good enough, or we can tell them that they are filled with this creative power to shape the world, that power is given to them by God. And when you come to realize, when you see yourself as someone whose words have that power, you understand why James is so intent on making sure we take them seriously. You have the chance to use your words to bless or to curse, to build up or tear down. What do you want to do with this power that God has given you? When was the last time you ever thought of yourself as someone with that much power? Most of us reserve the power of speech to those who sit in political office or have telecasts. But for James, every one of us and every interaction and every conversation, we have this creative power given to us. And while I believe that James wants us to take this seriously, I don't think his intent here ultimately is to scare us, right? And to scare you into never saying anything to anyone, right? Like, oh my goodness, I might say something wrong and I'm totally going to doom their future because I said maybe you should do more in literature instead of science, right? And now I've deprived NASA of their greatest physicist of all time, right? That's not what he's saying. James wants us to just pay attention to the ways in which our words can build relationships, can empower others, can fill others with a sense of possibility. And can we learn to see every interaction, every opportunity before us as a way to speak words of love and life? Those are words of blessing. And so this week, I want you to take some time to think about this, right? I mean, do you really see yourself as having this power? Have you ever considered that? Right? spend some time in that in and of itself. How can you shape someone? And maybe it's best to do this backwards, right? Sometimes it's hard for us to see that. Think of some words that someone has spoken into your life, some encouragement, some guidance, some wisdom that shaped your life, that changed the decision you made, the trajectory you were headed, how you looked at yourself, what you thought was possible, right? Because if it's true for someone else who spoke that to you, it's also true for you speaking it and sharing that. That's first, but this really wouldn't be a good ending to a sermon in the spirit of James if I didn't leave you with some like concrete, practical application, right? This is all James wants to do. So here's your challenge this week for you to go out and do. I want you to share words of blessing with three people this week, okay? Let me be clear on what I mean by that, because you are all really wonderful people. And you're all very kind. And I know that you always say thank you and please and hello. And so I don't mean this week go out and be courteous to people. Although if that's a challenge for you, please do that, right? So if that's a growing edge, take that one on. Maybe start there. But I'm going to assume you're not dealing with that. This week, I want you to speak some really intentional, heartfelt words to someone else, words of encouragement, words of care, support, words of love. You can choose how this gets actually lived out, right? Like write a card or a letter to someone just to let them know that you care about them. Or let them know that maybe it's someone like a friend and you're going to let them know how much their friendship means to you. I mentioned this is the start of school. I've talked about teachers today. This is a great way to encourage teachers. We should encourage our teachers more. Write a card to the teacher on the beginning of a school year. It's a good thing for kids to do too, right? Call someone, have a conversation, but share some words of blessing with someone. And this is good not just in what's being shared with the other person, but pay attention to the way their face lights up. Pay attention to the joy that comes. So often, it's a joy for me to share words of encouragement with someone else, right? I feel just as good, right? Because we have a moment of connection, of sharing, right? This is about mutual blessing here. So find three people this week. And whether it's a card, a phone call, however you want to do it, I want you to encourage that person. I want you to support that person. I want you to care for that person. Because in this way, we use our words in the way that James wants us to be people who create a world of greater kindness, of deeper joy, and of endless love. So may we be the people who bless and praise, who live and love, and create a world of meaning. Amen.